up?
Hello, Mr. Worrell. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
First of all, I mean, like, it's funny, knowing that we're going to be doing this every week, I was, like, watching the game on Monday night and thinking, what is he going to criticize? Like, what is there? How do you look at that game and say, and it's good because it's, the funny thing is, the only time I communicated with you was the text when I'm constantly watching Chris Conte be out of position. I don't know why I'm obsessed with him, but it seems to me, and I think let's start there because if there's any flaw in this defense, and there's not many, if there's any flaw, two plays Monday night. There was Dez Bryant out of the slot, which I know you talked a little bit to me about on Monday night with where Conte was late and he beat him right up the field. And then Bryant beat Major Wright on what seemed like, I think he was lined up outside, but he beat Major Wright deep when the ball went through his hands.
Yeah.
So my first question is, are the safeties playing well right now, or are they being saved by a great pass rush and some drop balls?
Well, I think anytime you look at safeties in this system, you have to start with how the front four is playing. Because if you don't have a front four that gets pressure on the quarterback, those safeties are going to get put in positions where they're going to get beaten because they have just way too much field to cover. And if quarterbacks are allowed to sit in the pocket and receivers are allowed to stretch the field vertically, they're going to be in a bind one way or another. They're going to be, and they might be in perfect position, but they can't cover two guys at once. If you have a lot of time, you can get two guys down the field and stretch a safety and find a guy that's open. But, you know, I watched the All-22, and I came away kind of with the same thoughts that you had in regards to Chris Conte. And watching the film, he actually played a pretty solid game. You know, he was pretty good when he was down on Jason Witten a couple of times. He completed one. He got knocked off another route a second time, but it was an incomplete pass. Really where he struggles, he's just a little bit – his first one or two steps out of a break, he just seems to take the wrong angle at times. And that's really the only problem that I see with his game right now. You know, we talked about when he was out of position a couple weeks ago where he turned his hips inside and the route went outside and he was a couple steps late. He's been good with his footwork recently, but it's really – coming out of breaks and taking a poor angle where he has to adjust after he makes his break and it leaves him a step or two behind. The one with Dez Bryant down the seam, Tony Romo did a really good job of holding him in the middle of the field. He looked off. He even took his hand off the ball. And you're taught as a safety, if the quarterback takes his hand off the ball, you can open up and break. Well, Chris Conte stayed square, and then Tony Romo came back. He would have been in better position, but like I said, he took a couple of bad steps coming out of his break and had to adjust his angle. And by that time, Dez Bryant, if he would have caught the ball, it would have been a touchdown.
Let's do football 101 here. Explain that to me. So when you said the quarterback takes his hand off the ball, you mean the left hand, when he takes the left hand off the ball?
Right. Yeah. You know, if you're in the deep middle, which he was in this field, deep middle of the field, which he was on this particular snap, you're taught to stay square. If the quarterback is looking at one side of the field, you can weave in your pedal to the side of the field he's looking at, but you can't open up and make a break and start running until you see that left hand come off the ball. Okay, then you say he's committed to throw the ball in that direction. Okay, well, Tony Romo did a good job of looking to Chris Conte's right, you know, the left side of the offense, even took his hand off the ball, gave a slight pump, and then came back and threw right away to Dez Bryant. So really, he did a good job of staying square because Tony Romo's hand came off the ball as he was looking left, and if he would have broken that way, it would have been totally justifiable. But he stayed square and was able to make a break to the correct side of the field. Unfortunately, the angle was just a little bit off. So that's how they play, even when they're in the deep half, that's how you have to play it too. If you turn your hips like he did a couple weeks ago in the wrong direction, you usually don't have time to make up for that. And that's why guys like Mike Brown and Chris Harris were so good in this system because they were very disciplined with their footwork, very disciplined with their eyes. And a guy like Daniel Manning struggled a little bit because he was a little bit less disciplined, relied more on athleticism, And that's why I think now you see him thriving in a 3-4 system or a hybrid 3-4 down in Houston, because there's a little bit more flexibility within that system to make plays, to maybe play outside the rules just a little bit, and you have more freedom. Whereas in the cover two, the rules are pretty set, and you have to stick by them. And if you can do that with the front four that gets a pass rush, safeties can make plays. And then the major right, the play that looked like major right was out of position. You know, I'm not exactly sure, and I watched it 5 or 6 times. I'm not exactly sure what the coverage was, because it looked like the corners were squatting, but major right started coming down like a deep third flat player, and Chris Conte appeared to go to the middle of the field, but he kind of stayed on the opposite hash, didn't quite get to the middle. So I don't know if it was a snap where major right got caught a little bit too low in a show and didn't have time to get back in his half field, because neither Tim Jennings or Charles Tillman sunk like they were playing the deep third. So, you know, I think that's what happened. They were showing single high safety. We're supposed to roll to too high, and I don't think major right got there. But that was really an alignment mistake more than an athletic mistake. The play that he made on the sideline, that interception, is one of the better plays I've seen in a long time, you know, out of a half-field safety, reading the quarterback. And once again, there were two verticals. He stayed square. As soon as Tony Romo's hand came off the ball, he made a break and made, you know, just an excellent interception.
Well, I mean, I think it's funny. In the past, what I've said about the Bears' safeties is sort of like referees. The less we notice them, the better it usually is. You know, in this system, the less you notice the safeties, it tends to be a better sign for the defense. With these two guys, I mean, I know the health is a concern with Major Wright, but Major Wright is finding the football.
Yeah.
And to a certain extent, you can write it off to a certain extent, but this was what Mike Brown used to do. Mike Brown, that was not a coincidence that Mike Brown found the football. Whenever that thing went up in the air, it was in his hands. And Major Wright's got a lot of that in him. And I mean, you would know a lot better than I am. Aren't these two guys, aren't Wright and Conte, if they can stay healthy and keep developing, aren't they sort of a perfect tandem for this system?
Yeah, I think they're perfect for one another, in that, you know, Major Wright, when he came out of Florida and when he played early in his career, I really didn't think he was as good as an athlete as he actually is. He's a big guy. He's physical at Florida. But I really didn't see the athleticism that he's shown, you know, especially this year. And Chris Conte is more of a true free safety. But he's also a guy that can come down and play man-to-man on a more athletic tight end, not necessarily a slot receiver. You know, you have DJ Moore for that, so you really don't want to match him up with a receiver. But, you know, I think he can man up a lot of the tight ends in the league that you're going to play man-to-man against, and then, you know, get Major right back in the middle of the field, which he's good back there too. And I think Chris Conte is really going to develop this season. I think when we have this conversation week 10, week 11, week 12, we're going to be talking about a different player, because the athleticism is there. You know, I think he'll improve his tackling, which, you know, he's a good tackler, but in that system you have to be a great tackler, because, you know, you have to make open field tackles, and if you don't, usually it's points on the board. And I think he's just going to get more of a feel for the speed of the game, for the speed of the receivers, and adjust the way he's coming out of his break, so he puts himself in a little better position. And Major Wright has been a playmaker this year. It's hard to be a playmaking safety in the system like you talked about. But, the Bears are doing a lot more stuff this year than they have in the past. The Charles Tillman interception, you know, Chris Conte came and pressured off the edge. Lance Briggs came weak. Brian Urlacher dropped out. And Shea McClellan dropped out and played really man-to-man on Jason Witten with a deep middle safety. So, you know, those are things that you haven't seen a lot, and Shea McClellan gives them that flexibility of a really athletic, basically defensive lineman, outside linebacker, hybrid guy who can definitely rush the passer, a guy that you have to count for in protection, but he's a guy that is a good enough athlete that can allow them to do that, to get back into coverage. And, you know, they gave the same look later in the game. They all dropped, you know, Urlacher, Briggs, Chris Conte dropped into coverage, and they rushed four, so they're doing a lot more being a lot more aggressive at the line of scrimmage. They played a lot of press man against the Cowboys, which I really didn't expect just because of the matchups with Miles Austin and Dez Bryant and Ogletree, and they did a great job because they're getting pressure. And when you can get pressure and you have athletes in the secondary like they have this year, you know, it opens up a lot of possibilities. They're not just going to sit back in the basic cover two, rush four, and you know, let them move the ball down the field and try to keep them out of the end zone. They're a lot more aggressive. They're getting a lot more pressure on the quarterback, bringing more than four guys because they're very comfortable with the guys they have covering in the back end.
The way Urlacher played Monday night sort of looked to me like it's coming. The speed is coming back. The confidence is coming back. I thought he was good in the run game. I thought he was good sort of plugging holes. Where you notice him right now struggling a bit is just the sideline-to-sideline speed. It's not there. And I actually noticed on Twitter the other night a lot of the sort of national media members were tweeting about it. You could just – he's a step or two slow. And I wrote today – and maybe I'm dead wrong, but I wrote today that I think this Jacksonville game is a very interesting matchup for them because they're going to commit to the run game. You're going to get a whole lot of Jones-Drew, but they're also heavy tight end and heavy screen game. They want to make things easy for Gabbert. Is this matchup Sunday going to be a nice opportunity as a sort of barometer to see where Urlacher's at?
Yeah, you know, they're not going to put the ball in Blaine Gabbert's hands and expect him to beat this defense, and you have Maurice Jones-Drew, who's one of the best backs in the NFL, and I think they're going to have to lean heavily on him, like you said, the run game, and then throwing screens to him, you know, to help take the pressure off, because you know, Chicago's going to bring pressure. They're going to try to rattle him early and often. And, you know, I think he was excellent in the run game the other night, the best that I've seen him coming downhill and being physical, making tackles, which – you know, it's kind of the easy part of his job. I mean, it's not easy, but compared to the other things they expect him to do, you know, it's one of the easier things he has to do. You know, you saw him a couple times slow getting to the sideline on a run that pressed outside. And, you know, I'd like to think that as the season progresses, he's going to, you know, get a little bit faster, get a little bit quicker, you know, get a little bit of that speed back that he's had for so many years. But, you know, I don't know if that's going to be the case. I don't know if he's ever going to be the guy that can do that at the level that he did it. And, you know, I definitely hope he will. And I really think, you know, this game to him is going to be all about tackling Maurice Jones-Drew. So I think this is going to be an opportunity for him to play a big part in what they do defensively, to make a lot of tackles and make a lot of plays based on what Jacksonville is going to do. And I think we'll see some of the, you know, the old physical Brian Urlacher coming downhill and making tackles.
I mean, it would be welcome. I tend to agree with you. I'm not sure we're going to see in 2012 that range of speed. I don't know that his career is over. I don't know that I buy this is it for him. I just think he's going through something with that knee right now that's just not going to repair itself overnight. And I don't think the rigors of an NFL season are going to help it repair itself.
It's nice to have
the bye week next week, but who knows? Here's a question I have for you, and it's something I was thinking about watching that game Monday night, which is I was watching Henry Melton and Stephen Paya and Corey Wooten, and I kept thinking to myself, what is it like to come into this league, into a Lovie Smith defense, and why is he now having success where I don't know that he had it early on, but why is he now having success developing these defensive linemen? I mean, in the last 2 years, it has become noticeable. And I'm prone to credit Marinelli because, that's the constant of the last 2 years.
Yeah.
But what is it like to come into that defense as a young player? What is the learning curve? How long does it take?
Well, I think for the front four, this is about as simple of a system as you can get because you're asked to get up the field right away and put pressure on the quarterback, put pressure on the offensive line. So if they want to double team, they have to stay on that double team so Urlacher and Briggs and Nick Roach can run free to make tackles. You know, you're responsible for a single gap, and you need to get in that gap as fast as possible. You know, that being said, there are countless schemes of blocking up front that you have to adjust to and adapt to. So, you know, the learning curve for a defensive lineman in the system is definitely a lot – a lot faster than a safety or a corner or a middle linebacker would be. But there's still things to learn. That's why, you know, I think you see guys like Henry Melton start to blossom, you know, a couple years into his career. And I think this guy is playing as good as you know, anybody we've seen at the three technique position since Lovie Smith's been in Chicago. And, you know, that includes Tommy Harris, who was a multiple Pro Bowler before, you know, he was kind of injury prone. This guy's big and he's fast and he's physical. He's all over the field getting pressure on the quarterbacks. He's long. He's able to control blocks in the run game. You know, I think he's as complete of a guy they've had inside in a long time. And I expect big things out of him. I'm not sure his contract situation, but he's going to get paid very, very well in the near future because he's a game changer for them inside. And when you pair him with Julius Peppers and Israel Adonijé and all the other guys they have on that front four, that's why you see all these plays being made, all these turnovers on defense, you know, because of the way those guys are playing up front. And, you know, if they continue to develop, I think you're going to see – you know, just a constant rotation of guys that can get after the quarterback, then create havoc in the backfield. Whereas, you know, the 06 year, once Tommy Harris went down, that really changed our defense as a whole because he was such an important part of that, how we played, getting pressure, allowing us to play coverage, you know, with seven guys. And if they continue to stay healthy up front, then this is going to be a front four that is going to be one of the best in football for a long time.
Well, you know, I always say about this defense is, you know, it's an up-the-middle defense for me. It is the best I've ever seen it played was Warren Sapp, Derek Brooks, John Lynch. And when you have that strength up the middle, and they sort of have a dual safety thing as opposed to the big hitter that John Lynch was, you know, even at 85%, Urlacher is a terrific player. Melton has changed everything because and I'll tell you, Stephen Paya has as well. And what they're getting production out of Okoye when he comes in. They're getting production out of McClellan, and they're getting production out of everybody on that defensive line. And it's you hope it holds up, but I've just never quite seen anything like it. Maurice Jones-Drew this week comes to town, and it is a little odd question, but I was thinking about it today. You know, there's the animosity between him and Cutler. You know, there is this tweet he sent calling Jay a quitter.
Oh, yeah.
Is that going to be at all in a defensive player's mind this week to say, hey, for my quarterback, I'm giving this guy an extra shoulder to the neck when he's down?
I don't think so. That was so long ago, and you obviously want, you know, if somebody says something like that about one of your teammates, you want to stand up for him. And when you have the opportunity to play somebody like that, you know, you want to make sure they know that you didn't appreciate that. But I think, you know, all the focus is going to be on just stopping Maurice Jones-Drew on the field, taking away what he wants to do, you know, making him work for every yard he's going to get because he's a great player. You know, you don't lead the NFL in rushing by coincidence. You know, he's a guy that's a threat to take it all the time. He's going to be there for four quarters running hard. So I think their focus is going to be more on just what Jacksonville wants to do, how they want to attack him, and taking Maurice Jones out of the game as much as they possibly can.
Here's my my fun question for you, because I Wikipedia'd Cameron Worrell today, and I don't know why I did it, because I just wanted to learn more. And you have two career sacks in the NFL.
Yeah.
Who are they? I know you remember them, so who'd you sack?
I sacked Dante Culpepper, and I sacked...
When you were with the Bears?
Yeah, when I was in Chicago, yeah.
Okay. Were they Culpepper both when you were in Chicago?
When he was in Minnesota, and then... Brett Favre, 06 when I was in Chicago, he was still with Green Bay.
You sacked Brett Favre?
Yeah, and it's funny because it was a New Year's Eve game. You know,
it was that game that Rex said he didn't prepare for.
Right, that game.
That game.
So playing in the second half, and you know, I played a lot that game because they ran a lot of you know, two tight end, two running back stuff. So we were in our tank personnel a lot. And the second half, I was playing some nickel, playing some safety. I was playing nickel. Brett Favre got outside the pocket. You know, I came out of my coverage. He kind of dove. I was really trying to take his head off at the time. So he slid out of the way. I got a sack. And at the time, you know, they won that game. He was crying on the field. You know, we were thinking, man, that might be the last person to ever sack Brett Favre. you know, he might retire after this season. Well, he ended up playing, I don't know, probably 8 more seasons after that.
I mean, he just played for another decade. But,
but you know,
it's interesting
time,
because
it was funny because we thought it might be it, but he kept going.
And it's interesting because it was a Bear, Corey Wooten, who basically ended his career. I mean,
exactly,
with the Vikings. But that's interesting because I remember that game, that New Year's Eve, because I was very angry that night because I thought I wanted to win that game and go flying into the postseason, and I thought the Bears looked dead that night, and
yeah.
Rex was horrible. But now that game is going to have entirely new meaning to me because I'm going to go find that I will have next week when we post this, the video of your sacking Brett Favre will be on the site. I will find that video. It's got to be somewhere.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. It was a good one. Like I said, I almost got him good. There's a picture that I have of him diving out of the way and my shoulder's just about to knock his head off, but he got out of the way just at the last minute. And it's funny because, you know, back then we kind of treated – we knew we were seeded number one. We already had the bye in the playoffs. We treated that game more like a bye week, you know, more like a preseason game than anything else. I think the starters maybe played a quarter and, you know, guys that were kind of banged up didn't even play. So, you know, you're 100% right. We kind of, you know, gave that one up to stay healthy and move on to the playoffs. And, you know, it worked out for us that year, I think, just because we were, you know, we were a good team. We could handle it. Had a lot of veterans.
That was a really good team. That was a really good team that – I go back to Devin's kickoff return in the Super Bowl, and it took to the fourth quarter of that game for me to acknowledge they weren't going to win the Super Bowl. But you guys were, 2006, what a year.
Yeah.
Okay, Cam, we'll talk to you next week. Thanks as always.
Oh, my pleasure.